being the first Wednesday of the month, I've got the day right, between 1 and 2, we've got our private investigator, Peter from Absolute
Facts.
Absolute Facts. I know I get that sometime messed up because unfortunately it's on our computer or something else. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you for having me again, Alan.
Always a pleasure to have you. Now, Peter, we sent your way last time with some with an inquiry. We've got another one to send your way with today, but it was regarding shoplifting.
Yeah, so you were trying to establish whether there are any actual figures about an increase in shoplifting in particular over the last 6 to 12 months.
Yep.
And I've stumbled across a, well, it's a website slash product that that I was aware of beforehand. And it's by a company called Aura, spelled A-U-R-O-R, if anyone wants to look them up. And the essence of what Aura does is many of the large retail outlets and Victoria Police and other police, for that matter, basically input incidents into a single database, which is a shared database amongst retailers and law enforcement entities, so that if there's a commonality in respect to the same people offending at multiple different stores or different locations or things like that, then there's a shared arrangement there where they can input and everyone can see what everyone else can see, which is a fantastic concept.
Peter, can I just ask you one question, and sure. you may not answer this. William, with a shoplifter, do they generally go for the same sort of store? Like if it's a Kmart, are they only ever involved in Kmarts or do they just go across the board, do you know?
No, look, generally I think they work on their methods and they have a method that might work for a month or two or perhaps even longer at one particular retailer. But from my knowledge of it is, if they're hitting one retailer, they're likely to be hitting multiple retailers.
Yep.
So that would generally be the case. Now, just I'm going to quote directly off the Aura website, so I'm attributing it to them. But their opening banner paragraph or comment is an alarming increase in ORC, which is the industry term for organised retail crime. Lately, largely driven by COVID-19.
Yes. That was the question, wasn't it?
Yep. That was the question. So although the fact that retailers around the world have been dealing with increasing incidents of ORC, the fact that that isn't a new fact, but the data is clear that organised retail crime has been rising more aggressively than ever before. And I think I touched on this. This is a retail survey out of... this will be out of the States, I suspect. 69% of retailers surveyed saw an increase in risk in 2020-2021 due to COVID. And I have touched on this before as well. Retailers also reporting more violence and aggressive incidents compared to earlier years.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, so I think we were touching on this about perhaps the desperation or the more desperation of people to try and steal and, you know, perhaps put food on the table or pay a car rego bill or something. And there's definitely a trend that people are becoming more belligerent, more determined, more aggressive and more violent to actually achieve that outcome. The figure they're putting here is in Australia, more than $24 million Australian being taken from stores every day.
Every day?
Yes, based on data that they're collecting. And that one in seven includes reports of threatening behaviour towards retail staff.
Gee.
Yeah.
Peter, in that, does it tell you in the breakdown, is there more food being stolen as opposed to, say, hardware or white goods?
No, I'll be honest with you, there's no particular breakdown on these numbers. There might be some stuff around which I might be able to look into.
Yep.
So this product and website Aura are basically saying they're claiming that they've prevented $10 million in thefts by sharing information, I guess is the best way to do it. They also make a reference to over $2.1 million spent in organised retail crime investigations in 2021.
Sure.
I suspect that's, I think it's a little bit higher than that for sure, but that's what they're seeing anyway. And the number of repeat people offending totaled more than 8,000 people across a 12-month period.
8,000?
Yeah, and again, I think that's probably an understatement, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
So then they're crowing about and rightly so, about a particular case that was quite successful, and it was in South Australia, where the person dubbed South Australia's most wanted shoplifter was apprehended using the partly due to the collation of evidence on their particular platform. And they were able to, police were able to eventually charge the person with more than 40 offences for stealing $35,000 worth of merchandise. And that basically what Aura are saying is by doing that, they've saved their retailers, in other words, their customers, approximately $35 a month, because that's how active this particular person was.
Was. Peter, I don't want to ask about your business because that's not fair, but so I don't want to get nitty-gritties, but how often, if you get called into an organisation, when they start telling you about what's going on, where you say, yeah, I think I know who this person is, do you come across that very often?
Probably be unlikely to know who the particular person is, but the methodology would be something I'm familiar with generally.
Oh, right.
And things tend to run in trends, so I think the word gets around as to how to defeat the retailer, if you like, and what method or what system's working. And I've touched on this in the past when I've spoken about, you look at a large retail hardware outlet and you go out into the garden area and you see the shade sales and you think, oh, that's wonderful, they put up a bit of shade in their garden area. You used to get pretty badly sunburned if you spent too much time in that area.
Mm.
But the actual reason behind that, as I understand it, is to restrict people from throwing things over the fence.
Oh, yeah,
and that's actually the reason, or the partial reason, why the shade sales have been put up, to try and limit that activity.
Great.
So let's say 5 or 6 years ago, that was quite a common occurrence. And that's now being hampered somewhat. So what I'm getting at is the word gets around for people to go, if you want to go to that particular store and lob some stuff over the fence to your mate, well, that's the way to go about it. So until the actual store does something to hamper or prevent that, they'll keep doing it.
Jeez, unreal. All right, just got a quick break, Peter, and we'll be back with more.
More than you deserve. So anyway, the hook of the hook, we won't do the whole thing. It goes on down, and he says, now I think I'm gonna have to leave you, because I'm feeling much too weak to share. You're making love to two of my best friends. I didn't know whatever to say. I saw you making love to a group of my best friends. So I looked them right in their eyes and I said, listen, group, you came for, and don't mind me, I won't throw you no curse. Go on and have yourself a ball and my good woman. Won't you take some more, boy? It's more than you deserve. Won't you take some more? It's more than you deserve.
I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts, and Peter comes along once a month, gives us an hour of his time to tell us a bit about what's been going on in the world of the private eye. Peter, you've still got a little bit more to tell us about what you were telling us.
Yeah, sure. So, again, one example that's been put up by AURA, A-U-R-O-R, just to attribute it to them. They're saying through an Australian retail partner and local law enforcement, they were able to successfully complete a massive raid worth over $65,000, uncovering stolen items such as baby formula, electric toothbrushes and vitamins. The people are involved, including the receivers of the items were charged, and police were basically able to complete this raid thanks to the retails and their platform, which connected the dots between people offending and reported incidents. And it apparently transpired the people involved have been targeting as many as 6 stores a day.
Gee, well, you wouldn't have thought there'd have been any sale for electric toothbrushes, would you?
Well, there must be a market in them somewhere, yeah. So, and just to finish off with them, what their point is, the point of their product, as they're saying, is that it's not only about connecting an app and then potentially apprehending people for actually committing the crimes. It's also the element of then making staff feel safer in the workplace, because these people are out of circulation, in effect, shut down. And yes, another interesting one, as they say, it's to prevent empty shelves for customers.
Well, and I guess the other issue is too, apart from the empty shelves, which we don't want, I guess we're paying for all this, aren't we? Like Mr. and Mrs. Honest is... Because it's built into part of the whole business module, isn't it?
Yes. So if retail, if shrinkage as a whole amount, which shrinkage covers, breakage, return, sort of end of product line, and actual theft and loss, if that increases, well, then obviously prices need to go up to compensate. So,
and how much did you say was being stolen per day?
Well, they're claiming here, they're saying $24 million in Australian dollars in Australia, stolen, being taken from stores every day.
Gee, so I don't know, but I think something like a Woolies store or one of those big supermarkets would have about $20 million of stock, wouldn't it?
In stock?
Yeah, just in, like, the total stock.
Per store?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suspect so. I don't actually know that for a fact, but it's certainly a big number.
So what I'm trying to get at, just for the listeners, we're almost saying one of those gets knocked off, the whole inside of that gets knocked off every day.
In Australia, yeah, true. It's
unbelievable.
Yeah, and I honestly suspect these numbers are what they're seeing, and that may well just be the tip of the iceberg.
And that doesn't account for where the shopkeeper grabs someone and tells them off and says, don't come back again, because they're not going to list that, are they?
No, but they might report it, and I think that's the purpose of their system. So it's also about attempted theft, and that people who are known offenders who are probably banned from that store or many stores for that matter, if they get apprehended within the store and asked to leave, then they'll make a report, because that is a breach of the order that they've been given, and potentially also a breach of the order by a magistrate to not enter those particular retail outlets. Mm. Whether anything ever gets done about that, I'm not so sure, but it can add up, yeah.
Peter, I think you've got an interesting tale to tell us about a court case.
One of the things a private investigator might do in his or her travels is attend generally a magistrate level of the magistrate court level of the system, and just to point out that is a public place, so there's no issue in attending the magistrate court and sitting on a seat in the courtroom or out in the common areas. Obviously, one of the things is a definite no-no is that you cannot record or use your phone or any kind of recording device, because that's a breach of the federal laws, I'm sure. And the purpose of doing that is to gather information for any particular client, basically gather intel, so just specifics of the person or the case, and look at what's called the modus operandi. So what that person is, how they're doing it, how they're committing their crimes, what their method is, perhaps who might be helping them or otherwise, so that it might give the retailer, for argument's sake, the opportunity to try and address that methodology, going back to the shade sales example. Yep. And one of the other aspects, Alan, is to actually then perhaps monitor the release of that person if they're actually in custody at the time, because the experience would suggest that within 24 to 2 weeks of being released, it is very, very likely that offender will return to this or attempt to return to the same form of offending that they were put away for in the first place.
So they've just come out. And they're back at it within 2 weeks.
Yeah, because they probably perhaps don't know any better, and there could be a drug addiction or something, or a drug habit to support. And in fact, look, I can be quite honest with you, Alan, I had one very recently within the last week or so, and the gentleman was released from custody by the magistrate to pretty much fend for himself and seek the counselling and drug rehabilitation support that he needed. And within 24 hours... he was attempting to re-offend, doing exactly what he had been doing before.
True. So, unbelievable.
Yeah, so case in point.
Peter, not necessarily talking about those. So I guess what you're saying, a lot of these people are just repeat offenders. They're not just one-offs where a lady goes and steals something because she needs a bit of food for a family. A lot of these are more entrenched, aren't they?
To be perfectly frank with you, I suggest it's a way of life for them. And we look back to what I read out before off that platform, which suggested that the people involved were targeting as many as 6 stores a day. Well, I think that's probably something that's very common with people trying to, make a living, in inverted commas, by doing this sort of thing, that they're prepared to travel, statewide even to try and get away with whatever their methodology at the time is. To
They're hoping to beat the methodology to the area, are they?
Yeah, look, I'm well familiar with people bobbing up all over Melbourne, let alone all over Victoria. So, and they might, Christmas holidays, they'll go to either north, south, east, or whatever, and they'll have a crack at that while they're on holidays as well. So,
so they don't actually take a break. They just move their. I was going to say, well, I don't know what you call it, but they just move their crooking or being crooked just to another area for a break.
Yeah, so, you know, if they're on holidays in up north, say at Albury-Wodonga or something, then they'll try it on at the Albury-Wodonga retail outlets to supplement their holiday expenditure, I suspect.
It's another world. All right, I'm just going to take a break, Peter. We'll be back with more. Welcome back to Community Connections. I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts, who's our private investigator, who comes in once a month on the first Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2, and he tells us all about the sort of things that are going on. And of course, if you do have any questions of Peter, I'm always welcome to put them to him. We've got a conglomeration of about 3 or 4 this afternoon that we're going to send him away with, and he's got a good reputation because I said the person, at least 2 of them, I said, oh, he doesn't normally work in that area. They said he's a terrific investigator. He'll be able to tell us. He'll be able to work it out. So there you go, Peter. They're really putting the pressure on you. Peter, you just wanted to talk a bit about youth.
Yeah, so sort of a bit of a continuation of what we've been talking about. There's been quite a bit of publicity coming up about the age of criminal responsibility in Victoria, yep, in particular, and Australia in general. And I see here it's the Greens were looking to introduce a bill to raise the age of criminal responsibility in Victoria from 10 to 14. And I think there was some more publicity about what was going to happen there, and that the Victoria might actually take the lead, so to speak, in raising the age of criminal responsibility. And then, of course, you had the pros and cons arguments come out in respect to that.
Yep.
Many pros, of course, about particularly the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders probably are a reasonable representation of that kind of youth crime or whatever in that age bracket. But equally, on the flip side, I did notice a comment that someone put up about explaining that, and I think this was to do with stolen vehicles and things like that, that the older siblings were encouraging the younger siblings in particular to commit the offences, because basically if they got apprehended by police, police virtually weren't allowed to do anything to them because of their age.
I was just going to ask you that, Peter, because I was reading a story, I think, or it was on TV the other night, where a 13-year-old was involved in a stolen car chase. They actually stole the car. So that means if the police pick them up, they just say, well, I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, they're kind of powerless, as I understand it. I've got to be careful with my actual wording here. Yeah. But and to look at it from an organised retail crime aspect, and I'm quite well aware of this, that, again, the siblings, or perhaps even more so the adult, the parents as such, or the father in particular, might actually have the child attempt to gain the financial advantage by using perhaps a stolen credit card or a cloned credit card or something like that to actually make a purchase, because if they get caught, then nothing much can happen to them. They can't really be restrained or retained by the loss prevention or the store personnel.
I don't want to cut across you, but there was a story about that years ago, wasn't a stage show all about Fagan or something, where he had a group of kids that went around knocking off all the stuff and he collected it all?
Yes, true. Yeah. Can I have some more porridge, please, sir? Yes. And then I've actually seen incidences of that where in part it's a little bit of an issue perhaps with the people working the register or the counter at the retail outlet. I mean, I've had a situation where a 15-year-old spent $2,000 worth of bought $2,000 worth of goods on a credit card, and the cashier per se didn't sort of blink an eye, and when we look closely at the CCTV footage, it was apparent that there were presumably the dad and perhaps an uncle were kind of loitering around. They were nearby, or they were to hand in case anything went wrong. But basically, at the end of the day, you know, a kid that looked around 13, 14, 15 years of age walked out the store with $2,000 worth of goods on a trolley.
Shock. Peter, I've got to take a quick break. We want to talk about something else, but I just first of all want to give you something for you to have a look at for next month, if I could.
Yep, go ahead.
Tonight.
Peter, I've got... welcome back to Community Connections. Peter, I've had a number of questions over the last few weeks. I'll roll them all into one. Now, I did tell the people that rang me about them that each time that this is not one of your expertises, but they believe that you're pretty good at getting all these facts and that. Now, we're talking about insurance fraud.
Right.
They want to know if you can find out what insurance fraud costs Australia every year, whether it's $1 million, $30 million, or, you know, $500 billion a year, and whether you can get a breakdown between personal fraud, i.e. the person who fakes they got a sore back and then they get photoed on a building site, or you know, they can't work because of this and that, next thing they're photographed digging trenches or, you know, doing all sorts of stuff, as opposed to fraud by business. You know, I'm not quite sure what they mean by that, but I think maybe, you know, the business is not going so well and all of a sudden the business gets burnt down and things are like that. Could you see if there's any facts on those, and also if you could find what the biggest insurance fraud that that Australia's had. Now, that could be corporate. I suspect it's going to be corporate, or maybe one of each. Maybe the biggest corporate insurance fraud, and if you could find the biggest personal fraud. You know, maybe someone has been on claiming insurance for 40 years and they've been working the whole 40 years. Could you have a look at that for us, please?
So, and I presume you mean the biggest attempted insurance fraud, because the first thing that comes... The first thing that comes to mind when you say that is, remember the Swagman restaurant?
yes, do remember that.
From all reports, that was an attempted insurance fraud, wasn't it?
Well, I don't want to say anything here, so we're not talking about people, but I think if I remember rightly, one of the owners got caught with stuff on the back of the truck at about 2:30 in the morning going away, and then the fire was at about 3 o'clock.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. We could all probably research that on our wonderful Google machine. But noted. I will do some work on that and see if I can have a look at the Insurance Council whether they actually release any particular stats or numbers.
And if you could please, Pat. Now you just want to talk briefly about fingerprints.
Yeah, look, something that popped up on my social media feed, and I've just now found an article to back that up. It's the Victoria Police celebrating their fingerprinting unit and how successful they are. And the thing that intrigued me was, or the headline of the part that I saw on the social media post, was that police say they can detect as many as 100 identification features on a single print. Even partial prints, and I wasn't aware of that. It's actually surprised me that there was 100 possible identification features, and they're claiming that they have a 99.83% accuracy rate. And the interesting part, one of the interesting things that came up was identical twins have the same DNA, but not the same fingerprints.
So in every other way, like the DNA is the same, but not their fingerprints.
Yeah, not their fingerprints. So, that was just something that intrigued me. The 100 points thing intrigued me initially, and now that I'm looking further, there's a couple of other little interesting takeaways to come into that. But that's, as I say, the Victorian Police singing the praises of their fingerprinting unit, as it's called, I believe, and pointing out, of course, that there is, as some people might be aware, there is a national fingerprint database. So for someone like myself that's got a licence from the police, an inquiry agent's licence, as it's called, my fingerprints are on file, so I can't get up to any shenanigans because I'll get caught pretty quickly.
Peter, the average person doesn't have... There's no database. Like, we don't have it taken when we're born or anything like that, do we? So there's... The only way that there is a database is, well, I was going to say they're crooks, but in your case, no. So it's either someone like yourself or crooks. That's the only people's fingerprints that are available. Is that right?
Yeah, and to answer that question, they've put a number up here saying as of December 2021, the national identification system held 4.5 million fingerprints. So Australia's population at the moment is, Alan?
Oh, I knew you were going to throw that to me. I'm not sure. Is it 8 million?
It's my turn to throw a curly one back at you, but is it around about 30 million or something?
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah,
I think we've just reached about 30, if I remember a recent comment. So that's, what's that, four and a half thirtieths. So it's a fairly small database, and you'd say that, and you agree with you, that would be people who have been caught up in the criminal justice system at some point, and then the flip side would be people applying for some sort of national or state accreditation, like myself, for argument's sake, and presumably security guards and members of the police force and probably emergency services, I suspect, but I don't know that for a fact, yeah.
And I suspect, I mean, I personally wouldn't care if they had my fingerprints because I'd only tend to go out and commit a crime, but I guarantee if they tried to bring it in that we all lodged our fingerprints, there'd be a huge outcry, wouldn't there?
I should imagine, yes. And I'm just reading a little further. So the reason for this article and social media were posted is that the Victoria's Forensic Unit is celebrating its 120th year.
Gee.
So they've been around for a while.
Yeah. I guess, Peter, this is probably a bit of a... I'm going to chuck back a hard question to you now. Has fingerprinting always been the same? I know it's just a case of, you know, you give your fingerprint, but I'm wondering whether, like, nearly 100 years ago, whether they realised back then that there's 100 different points or whether it's been refined and refined and refined.
Oh, you'd have to suspect that technology has been improving over time incrementally, like everything else, and also the ability of, if you've got a database, the ability of the, you know, to be able to crunch the...
Looking for a match
through the database would be... Presumably, there'd be some fairly powerful computer systems behind that, and you know, you see it on the TV shows, don't you? Then the movies that they throw a fingerprint in and it gurgles away there for a minute or an hour, and away you go. So,
Peter, I know a lot of police forces, and this is probably an unfair question to ask you. A lot of police forces don't interact between, you know, the different states. Is it a national database? Did it say that, or is it just a Victorian database?
No, it does say a national database. So that would be the sharing of powers. Obviously, you know, criminals don't restrict their activity to one particular state. So they do refer it to as a national database. So,
well, you'd have to hope so, wouldn't you? Because otherwise,
yeah, national automated fingerprint identification system. So. Without knowing, I suspect that's probably in Canberra somewhere or something like that in the ACT, so I might be wrong, but so presumably, particularly the federal police would have a pretty powerful database as well.
I wonder what the automated means when you just read that all out.
Well, I guess that means once you're scanned and gone on file, then you're in the supercomputer, and the automated part would be someone makes an inquiry and says, does this fingerprint or partial fingerprint come up with anything on your national database?
Peter, this is not a fair question to ask you, but I wonder who was the first person who came up with the idea of using fingerprints?
Actually, I just did see something about that when I was scanning through it. It's saying that it's quite an ancient process. It's been around for a hell of a long time, and believe it or not, I can't find that actual reference now, but they're saying that it's something that's been around for ancient history, like sounding like ancient sort of Greek history. Yeah.
For it still to happen, in the very first instance, somebody had to sit down and think about it, didn't they?
Yes. Well, as a point of identification or perhaps payment or something, or not sure, but yeah.
So somebody had to sit down at some stage and say, I wonder if all fingerprints are the same, didn't they?
Yeah, okay. So the practice of using fingerprints for identification dates back thousands of years. Prints have been found on ancient clay tablets and seals, on the walls of Egyptian tombs and on Minoan, Greek and Chinese pottery. In China, workers unable to read or write could pick up paychecks with their fingerprint. Chinese authorities would validate government documents with a finger. I hope that's not a literal finger. But
Well, I mean, some of the computers now, you can open your computer with your fingerprint, can't you?
Yes, and your phone.
Yeah. I know that I don't use it, but I know one of mine had the ability you could use your fingerprint if you wanted to register it on it.
Yeah, and I guess an extension of that would be sort of the iris recognition as well. So obviously that's another unique identifier, as I understand it.
And we think we're smart. We think that this is stuff's only just been around for a little while, and yet it's been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah, it's amazing what things sort of prick your curiosity or what knowledge you can extend your knowledge base, yeah.
Peter, unfortunately, I've got to go. Greg's just about due to come in and do the Council Connection show. So thank you for your time again, Peter. I always enjoy our time with you. We look forward to hearing you on the first Wednesday of April.
The 4th of April, unless it's Easter or something, is it?
Not that I know of, but...
No, it'll be the 4th of April, which will be a Wednesday, Alan.
That Wednesday between 1 and 2. I got it all right, I think, have I? Or have I messed that up?
No, you've done well. You've done well today.
Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate your time.
All right, and thank you for having me.
No worries. Thank you, Peter. See you. Bye.